It happens every day. No, you never have to wait long for a reminder that we should make sure that the people in charge in Washington, D.C. have as little to do with our everyday lives as possible. And that's why so many of them end up winning this.
And now it's time for The Jerk of the Week, starring John Steigerwald.
Hey, maybe you heard about the total eclipse of the sun that happened this week. Seemed to get quite a bit of media attention. It was in all the papers and everything. Anyway, Sheila Jackson Lee is a congresswoman from Texas, and she jumped to the front of the class with these brilliant remarks about the eclipse to a group of high school students.
Sometimes you've heard the word full moon. Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat that is almost impossible to go near the sun. The moon is more manageable.
It's almost impossible to get near the sun. Almost. Keep in mind that Sheila there was once on the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Just think about that for a minute. I don't know if that was before or after she asked the people at NASA if they could drive the Mars rover over to where Neil Armstrong planted the American flag. She actually asked that question. I do know that if it had been around back then, this would be the second time instead of the first time Sheila Jackson Lee had won the AM 1250 The Answer Jerk of the Week Award. Boy, and she is a winner. When we come back, the founder of PJ Media, Roger Simon, who had a front row seat for the O.J. Simpson trial, he's going to talk about why he thinks it was a turning point in American life. And in our second half hour, we're going to talk to David Bossie. He was deputy campaign manager for the 2016 Trump campaign, also an advisor in 2020. We're going to talk to him about, among other things, the chances of Joe Biden showing up for a debate, much less showing up for the election. Stick around. Well, you know who has the toughest job in the world right now? The person who agreed to deliver O.J. Simpson's eulogy, assuming there's going to be some kind of a service. Bruce, now known as Caitlyn Jenner, probably summed it up best on X yesterday with two words, good riddance. Roger Simon is the founder of PJ Media. He's a novelist, a screenwriter, now a columnist for Epoch Times, and he had a front row seat for the O.J. Simpson trial 30 years ago. He joins us now. Roger, thanks for coming on the show again. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, too, but I wasn't in the front row. I was about row four.
Oh, okay. Well, I was close.
Actually, the courtroom was very, very small, despite the fact the publicity, as we all remember, was gigantic. I got into the courtroom with my wife on a lottery system, and we were surprised to see there was quite a small courtroom. Which means that we were very close to O.J. the whole time. And ironically, he turned and smiled at my wife, who was quite attractive. And it was a weird feeling for both of us, I can tell you.
Yeah, just when you said that, it reminded me of something. It was very weird for me. I covered sports for 30 years here and spent a lot of time hanging around the Steelers' offices at Three Rivers Stadium. And I was walking through there one day. I had never met O.J. I'd been on TV in Pittsburgh, you know, doing sports for a long time. But I was walking through the Steeler offices, and he was sitting in this little library thing looking through some media guides or something. And I walked by, and he looked up, and he said, "Hi, John." And I said, "Hi, O.J." And I kept on walking. I don't know how he knew who I was. I never met the guy, but that's the extent of my my connection with O.J. So I'm just wondering what popped into your head.
Well, I had many more crazy connections to him.
Yeah, go ahead.
One was, of course, I was a screenwriter at the time, and I ran into him at Hollywood parties.
Yeah,
a couple of occasions. I did no more than shake his hand, but I was also teaching screenwriting at the American Film Institute on the graduate level. And one of my students, as it turned out, was O.J.'s gopher. So,
yeah, it's,
and so I taught what people usually do in writing classes, write what you know.
Yeah.
So this guy was writing a screenplay about a NBA former star, not NFL,
mm-hmm.
Who lived in Malibu but solved crimes by night. It was really a cliche-ridden, stupid script.
Yeah.
But as I would pump him for facts about O.J., and he said, well, A, he's a womanizer, B, he does a lot of coke, and three, he's an egomaniac. So I thought, those are no facts at all. I knew all of them.
Yeah, that's not that. He didn't break any news with that, did he?
No, he didn't.
So what popped into your head when you heard that he died?
Well, good riddance in a sense, but it also had a lot to do with my own life because I was kind of on the left until the O.J. trial started. And it started the fact that I later went on to start PJ Media, did all those things, and write for the Epoch Times and write conservative books. It sort of launched me in that direction because I had been a civil rights worker as a kid, as a 20-year-old mm-hmm. in the South. And what I saw at that trial were the beginnings of a flip on the civil rights movement. And it repelled me, but I didn't know how to take it at first. It was like baffling, what's going on here? I'm a believer in Gandhi's, an eye for an eye and the world will die. But I was seeing a lot of eye for an eye coming out of that jury, plus a lot of exploitation of the law by these famous lawyers that I knew of. What's going on here? It was like a harbinger of a lot of the bad things that have happened since.
Yeah.
The weaponization of the legal system is an obvious one. The rise of racism from the black side, another bad thing.
Yeah.
It was a very bad moment in our history that O.J. precipitated.
Yeah, you wrote in the piece for the Epoch Times. You say that his attorneys really made you mad, and he sure had a lot of them. What were some of the things that you didn't like that you saw from when I read the list of the attorneys? I mean, I remember the big guys and, three or four of them standing there.
Yeah.
Even had F. Lee Bailey at one
Johnny
point,
Cochran,
didn't he?
And all. Well, the ones that most made me mad were two guys that I actually had met, Shrek and, this is part of his name, the guys who ran the Innocence Project. The Innocence Project was a great thing. It was a project by which these lawyers, pro bono mostly, use DNA to find people who were falsely convicted, which there were a number. Mm-hmm. And they did the great thing because, DNA evidence was relatively new at that point and had not been used before and people had been falsely convicted. On the other hand, then they turned it on its head and the O.J. trial had the most obvious of all DNA evidence in it, meaning Ron Goldman's blood in O.J.'s Bronco.
Yeah.
Now, the two men didn't know each other. So how did Ron Goldman's blood get there other than O.J. slit his neck? And these two guys who had gotten everybody out for the same reasons obfuscated their very thing. It was immoral to watch.
Well, how did they do that? How do they explain that away?
I don't remember that. First of all, the jury was not educated in DNA. In fact,
right.
Most people now aren't educated in DNA.
Yeah.
So they could the very fact that that they were so-called experts, quote unquote, and indeed they were to some degree, flocks the jury. They said, well, it could be this, and it could be when they knew bloody well what the truth was.
Well, what attracted these lawyers to this case, aside from the obvious, the money? What made this?
I think it was the secondary thing was celebrity.
Yeah.
A lot of these, Alan Dershowitz was somebody I know slightly.
Mm-hmm.
you know, has done some great things in his life, but he's a publicity hound too, and I think he couldn't resist. You know, I can remember years ago, I was with Alan once, it was long past the trial, and I said, oh, come on, Alan, well, you know he was guilty. He wouldn't say a word.
I guess you can't, maybe, if I'm not an attorney.
Yeah, I guess you can't, but the truth of the matter is, to what degree, it asks a very interesting question, because particularly, you know, some kind of dumb civil cases where somebody's suing somebody else for $1 million, okay. But this, you know, this was two people killed in cold blood. So, you know, using all your skills to get somebody off, you know, is guilty. How could they not have known he was guilty? It's beyond comprehension to me, anyway.
Oh, I don't. It's,
doing that raises an interesting moral question. I mean, yes, everyone's entitled to a vigorous defense, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But what are the limits? Are there limits?
Yeah, we're talking to Roger Simon. He's the founder of PJ Media, novelist, screenwriter, now a columnist for Epoch Times, and he wrote a piece about that today. And so that's why we're talking to him. Roger, I've been hearing a lot of sound bites that I'm going to play something for you here. A lot of sound bites that sound like this. This is from a black woman named Stephanie Elam, E-L-A-M. She's some kind of a commentator on CNN. And I'd like to get your reaction to this. Go ahead and play it, Mike.
And it's also just worth noting how much was impacted by this trial, Jake. So many things happened. We saw policing changing here in the city. And it's also worth noting, because of that unrest, that racial unrest in the 90s, that is why so many people who may not have been invested in O.J. Simpson were just happy to see that someone who was rich and famous and black could get away with what other people did in the system as well, too.
Sounds like she says a lot of people were happy to see a guy get away with killing the mother of his two young kids.
I think unfortunately she's right.
Yeah.
I detect in her voice that they had justification. No, they didn't. Because the oldest expression we all know from childhood is that two wrongs don't make a right.
Right.
So and she was using that stupid excuse for, in a case that was terrible. I think there were more things to it, too, that it marked the beginning of the celebrity culture being lifted to new levels. I remember going down to downtown L.A. where I lived at the time and seeing nothing but satellite dishes around the courthouse to a degree that I had never seen before in my life. Now we're kind of used to it, I guess, when you go cover an event or something as a journalist. Oh, look at the mile of, you know, satellite dishes at a Trump event or something. But this was the beginning of it, and it changed our culture, too, into a kind of nauseating celebrity culture as well.
Yeah, and there's no turning back on that either, is there? That was 30 years ago, so it's much worse now.
It's hard to believe. It feels like 10 minutes ago to me. Maybe I'm betraying my age, but...
Well,
it doesn't feel that long ago.
Yeah, and you mentioned here, and you wrote in your piece today, that even back when you were watching this trial from up close, you thought you were watching a case of payback, and that's exactly what this woman said 30 years later, just on CNN.
Yeah, and she's saying it 30 years later, but I heard that through my cell phone here, and I hadn't heard that particular one. I've heard a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, what's terrible about it is you feel like there's a hint of, oh, it was fair.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't fair. That's not fair. I mean, payback is a very bad idea.
Yeah, do you know anybody?
Self-defense is fine, but payback is a different matter.
Right. Do you know anybody? Because I don't, but do you know anybody who thinks, you said Dershowitz had a no comment basically for you. Do you know anybody who thinks that he didn't kill his wife and Ron Goldman?
Not at all.
I don't know.
I mean, look, I haven't talked to everybody in the world, but when I lived in L.A. during those years, it was topic A of conversation to everybody at every party or every lunch or wherever you were. Sooner or later, the topic was the O.J. trial. And I never ran into anybody who thought he was innocent.
And the jury...
Lots of people thought he would get away with it, but I didn't know they were right. But I don't remember anybody saying he was innocent.
From what do you think that you got from being there in person, as you said, 15 feet away from O.J., that I didn't get from watching it on TV ad nauseum?
Well, I can't speak for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really don't know. I only can tell what it did to me is what I said. I think it was the first big launch in my road from the left to the right.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, Roger, though, is, excuse me. What I meant was, why was it different for you than it might have been for other people from the feel of being there in person?
Yeah, I think it was the intensity of, as we all know, things that you witness from 20 feet, which really in that small courtroom I did, are indelible in ways that seeing them on TV aren't. Although, you know, we've all witnessed many incredible things on television, including, in my case, the assassination of Jack Ruby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it.
And they can be indelible too, but this, I think it's more indelible when it's physical. And of course, since I had met the man previously and had a student who was his gopher and all, had all these weird connections to him that before this event, before these murders, I didn't even think about. I mean, they were just sort of like things that went on. But then I realized, oh, yeah, I met him. Oh, yeah, my student was his gopher. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. It sort of adds up. But before the murders occurred, they were just daily life, really.
We're talking to Roger Simon, who's the founder of PJ Media, a novelist, screenwriter. And with all those things you've done, been involved in the movie business and worked in the media, and what you just said about what the culture that might have been created by that trial, how do you feel now about cameras being allowed in there for that?
How do I feel about what? I missed that.
How do you feel about the live coverage on television of stuff like that now?
It's a fait accompli. How do I feel about it? Sometimes I don't want to watch, and sometimes I can't stop myself from watching.
I guess that's why they're on there. Yeah, but I just has it made it better for? Does it make it better for me if I'm on trial that it's on television, or worse? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I like to certain kind of events. I feel like I have to watch, and that's the end of it. I mean, crimes, I'm not always sure I have to watch. Frankly, it's political events which precipitate bigger crimes that I feel I have to watch.
Well. Roger, I appreciate you coming on the show. I have the same feeling that Bruce Caitlin Jenner has, which is good riddance. I think the world's a better place with him not being here. But I liked your piece today. I'm glad you were available to come on the show to talk about it.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, that's Roger Simon. And we will be right back. Well, if you've been listening to this show, you know that I don't think Joe Biden is going to be reelected because I don't think he's going to run. And I base that only on what I see when he's out in public. I mean, can you picture this guy in a debate? Well, the Trump campaign sent a letter to the Commission on Presidential Debates asking for more and earlier debates. David Bossi was the deputy campaign manager for the Trump 2016 campaign. He's also president of Citizens United. He was an advisor in 2020, still working with the Trump campaign now, and he joins us now. David, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure. You know, this is an important topic. We are the world's greatest democracy, and one of the great things about democracy in our campaigns and elections is the candidates actually debate. And so I'm really excited that President Trump sent this letter.
Yeah, are there actually official dates for presidential debates already? Are there some set?
Yeah, there are. Yeah, sir. Yes,
how many?
Sir. There's three. There are three set for the commission set for the presidential nominees and one for the vice presidential nominees for both parties. What President Trump is saying and what we have been saying for the last 2+ years is that the Presidential Debate Commission is out of step with the American people, that they've lost their way, that they're openly biased, and we all know it. The Trump campaign knows it, President Trump knows it, they are biased through their moderators, they're biased through their board, who is supposed to be nonpartisan and fair. They've had their board members attack President Trump in the past, and then the biggest thing is that you have debates after people start voting. This thing's a dinosaur in the sense that people need to hear the debates before they start voting. And the debate commission has refused to move towards voting. They don't understand now that enormous numbers of people vote early. There's no more election day. I don't like it, but there's no more election day. So you have to address that and talk about it openly. And so ballots will be dropped September 6th of this year. And their first debate, millions of people will have voted before the first debate. And I just think that that's completely unfair. And so does President Trump.
Yeah, we had a situation here in Pennsylvania with John Fetterman. He had like 600,000 votes already, or at least that's how many votes had been cast before he finally showed up for a debate about a week before the election and couldn't put two sentences together. And, of course, he's now a senator. So it was a big deal here in Pennsylvania. But you've seen Joe Biden. He obviously doesn't know what day it is. And this guy needs a teleprompter or a note card to order a pizza. If you were advising his campaign, is there any way you'd allow this guy to debate? Or would you do whatever you could to prevent him from debating?
No, absolutely not. You can't let this guy on a stage. You don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what day of the week it is. This is a country. We are a country right now that is being run by unelected staff and bureaucrats. That's the reality of it. And that's, if you look at the direction of America, you look at this economy that is on the verge of cratering. You look at the inflation rate. These guys lie to the American people every single day about inflation, about the cost of living, about whether all the economic indicators are pointing and glowing red. And you look at just when the inflation rate came out day before yesterday, the markets are down 500 points yesterday and 500 points today because Wall Street understands a lot better. And they are very nervous about what's going on in America and the American economy. And they're throwing the brakes on it. And this is going to harm your average mom and pop investor who has a 401k. Now, they don't have to be big investors, but they just have to have their retirement funds. And they're going to see the results of Joe Biden's horrendous economic policies. And that's why Donald Trump wants to get on the debate stage. He wants to debate Joe Biden's inflation rate versus the Trump inflation rate, the Joe Biden economy versus the Donald Trump economy, the Joe Biden gas prices versus the Donald Trump gas prices. It is so apparent as to what would happen and what will happen if the president gets on a stage with him. If President Trump gets on a stage with Joe Biden, that's one of the reasons that I believe that he will never do it.
Well, you mentioned that the reason that the Trump campaign sent the letter to the commission, they pointed out that millions of people will have already voted if they don't schedule some earlier debates. But really, how many people really need to see a debate at this point to make a decision between who's going to change their how many people are going to change their mind, is what I'm asking.
I understand what you're saying, but and I don't necessarily disagree that this is a divided country. But I believe, you know, in elections and in our democracy, and Joe Biden and these left wing, really just radicals that are running our country, love to throw out the term that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. And it is so offensive that they do that with impunity, because the biased mainstream media, you know, one, facilitates that and is never going to do anything to defend Donald Trump. But these guys are in bad shape, and we need to, meaning the Biden administration, we need to get them out of there. And Joe Biden, if he doesn't debate, is a threat to our democracy. Non-debates, no debates for the American people is truly, it's part of the democratic principles that this country was founded on. Open and fair elections, and where the American people get to see the two candidates for president, potentially three if RFK Jr. could get on the stage, if Cornel West can get on the stage, and we'll see about that. But that's one of the reasons that President Trump wants to get on a debate stage and get on early. Anytime, any place. That's what President Trump has said. I actually was with him at breakfast this morning, and he said, I want all of Joe Biden right now. Let's start. Let's not put it off. We can have debates in May, in June, in July. We can have debates starting over the summer. More debates, a more vigorous schedule, because the American people are going to see that Joe Biden isn't up for the job. He's not capable of doing the job. You know, he was just barely coherent in 2020.
Yeah.
During the debates, three and a half years later, the American people know, they see Joe Biden's decline on a daily basis.
Well, see, if I'm running ads for the Republican Party for the Trump campaign, I just put up, I don't know, 25 seconds of Joe Biden bumbling around, stumbling around, and I say, can you, and all, it would say nothing except on the screen, it would say at the end, can you picture this guy being president in 2027? Because he would be.
Right. That's exactly right. Look, he has to survive almost five more years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mid-April. He would be president until January 20th.
That's okay. What I mean. It's 4 years from now, this guy's going to be, he can't put two sentences together without a note card. We're talking to David Bossy. David, I mentioned you were the deputy campaign manager in 2016 and advisor in 2020. Do you have an official title with the campaign now?
I actually am chairman of the presidential debate committee. For the Republican National Committee, and also the co-chairman of the national convention happening this summer in Milwaukee. So I'm quite busy and active trying to help the president. This absolute disaster of a president, the worst president in American history, Joe Biden.
Yeah. So but getting back to the debate, especially since that's your main issue here right now. You know, what we just talked about here about the condition that Joe Biden is in, doesn't the only issue almost become whether or not Biden can make it through without speaking gibberish or falling asleep? Is it any more complicated than that?
No,
just showing up.
Yeah, I think the Biden people, you know, believe their own fake news media, you know, after in the days following the State of the Union, where he was yelling at the American people, you know, thinking, oh, that showed great vigor and energy. But, you know, people don't like getting yelled at.
No, it was terrible.
Number one. And number two is the policies, his policies. This election needs to be about policy, not personality.
Yep.
Okay. So, So if you think, if you just removed both of them and you removed Joe Biden and Donald Trump's names from the top of the ledger and you went through the list of issues of the day, whether it's the economy, gas prices, home fuel prices, grocery prices, cost of living, whether you are making more today than you were 4 years ago, whether it is national security in the Afghanistan debacle, the war in the Ukraine, what him allowing Iran and Hamas to attack Israel, whether it's the two-tiered justice system, our open borders, people pouring into this country unfettered. It is absolutely, if you go through issue by issue and you just took the names off the top of the ledger, the American people are with Donald Trump without question, because they are sick and tired of watching this downward spiral. We are on the cusp, on the verge of losing that American dream. I am scared to death for my children and my grandchildren's futures. And I've said this many times as a political guy running campaigns. I said it in 2016. It happened to be true then. And it's true now. This is the most important election of our life, because the future of America, and this is not hyperbole, the future of America is at stake.
And David, what kind of odds would you have to get to bet on Joe Biden being the nominee?
I'll be honest with you. He's going to be the nominee.
You think so?
I really do. And the reason why is it's the horse is out of the barn. They have a very difficult time now at an open convention, taking it away from Joe Biden. Now, if Joe Biden was to step away, if he said, "Hey, for the betterment of the country and the party, I'm going to step away," and how do you take it away from Kamala Harris,
yeah,
his vice president? By the way, the only person in America with lower poll numbers than him.
Oh.
Okay, the delegates who are elected to go to their convention in Chicago are Biden-Harris delegates. Those are people who are there as friends, donors, have relationships. It's going to be very difficult to take it away from Joe Biden and take it away from Kamala Harris to give it to, you're going to give it to the guy in California or the governor of Illinois. I just think their base will absolutely implode. And so I wish that they would. I think they will.
I got a minute left with David Bossie. The polls, based on what's happened in past elections, really, they show Biden has no chance, especially today. I saw some numbers on the how much black males are moving toward Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Is cheating the only way he wins? If you looked at the polls and based it on past performance.
Yeah, a couple things. One is we're going to have to win by more than they cheat. Okay, let's make no bones about that. That's a fact. They're going to try whatever. We don't know what they're going to do yet because, 2020, we didn't see it until it was too late. Here, we have people, the campaign has people, the RNC has people, the other campaigns across the country have, everybody has their eyes open, and everybody is well aware. So this is going to be a different style. But I will tell you, I know I see these numbers, just like you're talking about, the polling that shows President Trump wins. But I tell everybody, because I'm a sports guy, you don't win the World Series in May and you don't win the Super Bowl in November. You have to win on Election Day. You have to win at the ballot box. We are 7 months away. We have to run through the tape. We have to work hard. Anybody who is a supporter of President Trump's has to get out there and make sure they're registered to vote, to make sure their family's registered to vote, to make sure their friends and neighbors, anyone that they can. This is a monumental election. America's future hinges on it. Donald Trump must win. Joe Biden must lose and go back to the basement in Delaware.
Hey, David, I'm out of time. I appreciate you coming on. Just one quick thing. You said you had breakfast with the president today, President Trump. Next time you do, you have my number here. Tell me you can call into the show anytime. I'll try to squeeze them
in.
I'll
do that. I'll do it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. That's David Bossie with the Trump campaign. I'll be right back. So I think it's pretty cool that on today's show you heard from a guy who sat 15 feet away from O.J. Simpson during his trial 30 years ago, followed by a guy who had breakfast with President Donald Trump this morning. So that's, I think that's pretty cool. And that's kind of why I really like doing this show and I don't miss sports. A lot of people ask me why I don't do sports and if I miss it. And I there are times when I could get back into that and some of that stuff, but a lot of it I think is crazy now and I don't miss a lot of it. But I get to talk to interesting people, and I include the two people today, Roger Simon and David Bossie. I think I should finish with some breaking news here. This is from today. The headlines at the Federalist. House Speaker kills effort to stop the feds from spying on Americans without a warrant. It says here on Friday, House Speaker Mike Johnson and other Republicans joined enough Democrats to defeat 212-212. It's a tie, but it's a loss. A bill amendment requiring the federal government to obtain a warrant before spying on Americans before they're even accused of a crime. The GOP-controlled House failed to add an amendment proposed by Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona that would have altered Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence, that's the FISA Act, to mandate that federal authorities obtain a warrant before surveilling American citizens. Johnson and 85 Republicans joined Democrats in killing Biggs' proposal through a field through a tied House vote. The House passed the bill 273-147 to reauthorize the government's use of FISA for the next 2 years, with 126 Republicans and 147 Democrats voting in favor. The bill must clear the Senate before it hits President Joe Biden's desk for a signature. So that's all the scoring there. But Section 702 has that's what allows the government to carry out warrantless surveillance on American citizens. And there are people who think that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment and it stinks. But for some reason, the Republican Speaker of the House cast the vote that prevented it from being shut down. There were 85 Republicans. I'm happy to say that the guy we had on yesterday, Guy Reschenthaler, was not one of the 85 Republicans who voted for it. So, and the White House, it says here, was working hard, very intense White House lobbying effort on the warrant issue. Jake Sullivan, Merrick Garland made calls. They all made calls. And unfortunately, it seems to me, what do I know? But unfortunately, it seems to me that Mike Johnson was there to take the call. What was the point of getting rid of Kevin McCarthy? What's different? I don't get it. Maybe we'll find out Monday. That's when I'll talk to you next. Bye.